This tape is a preliminary edit of the history of RCA radio station KPH. The narrator is Commander Richard Johnstone, author of the book My San Francisco Story of the Waterfront and the Wireless. He is well qualified, as he lived close to KPH number 2 and was operator at KPH number 3 from 1914 until it was taken over by the Navy in 1917. After Dick's description of each station, representative messages of the period are included, using tones as close to the original as we can produce. Names of the operators cutting the tapes are also given.
My earliest memory of a wireless station located in the Palace Hotel in downtown San Francisco was at the time of the San Francisco earthquake and fire of April 18, 1906. Using the original call letters PH and operated by the DeForest Wireless Telegraph Company, both the hotel and station were destroyed by the big fire.
Here you have the sound of the earliest commercial wireless station located on the Pacific Coast, the 2-kilowatt open gap PH working the SS Asia WT. W6AX cut both of those tapes.
In 1907, PH Station was rebuilt and located on Telegraph Hill, a high cliff situated on Green Street, San Francisco, overlooking the bay. The site was close to where the Coit Tower stands today. Telegraph Hill was so named because it was the advantage spot for sighting and reporting the arrival of sailing vessels in the bay. Being a wireless amateur, recall climbing Telegraph Hill and visiting PH number 2. It was then operated by the United Wireless Telegraph Company. A single 250-foot mast supported an umbrella-type aerial, being well anchored and guyed alongside the wireless shack. In the year 1908, this station established a direct communication with Honolulu, HU, 2,100 miles away. The steamers Alameda and Mariposa worked PH over 1,000 miles offshore. This was actually amazing in those days. Early in 1910, PH Station was moved to a site in Daly City, San Mateo County, just over the San Francisco County line. For good reason, the place was called Hillcrest. A beautiful view of the Pacific Ocean, Lake Merced, and a large part of San Francisco and its bay surrounded the location of PH number 3. the Ocean Shore Railroad, a steam train bound for the Santa Cruz beach down the coast, could be seen for miles, winding between the hills and valleys below, except when the fog rolled in from the Pacific. The wireless shack at Hillcrest was located between two 250-foot masts, each painted black and very well guided, as wind velocities up to 75 miles per hour were frequent. The aerial, hung between these masts, consisted of two copper cables on two 25-foot 4x4 spreaders. A perfect T lead-in came down to the shack in the center. The ground was a problem due to the rocky formation at Hillcrest and consisted of a galvanized mesh of heavy wire strung over an acre of ground to form a contrepoise. There were about 2,000 feet of this wire welded every 3 feet. Cows and horses continually tore up the net. It was one big mess of twisted wire as the years wore on. Nothing but a cow path led from the bottom of the hill to the station. A good climb. All heavy equipment had to be hauled up by sled drawn by two horses. Another problem was skunks. The midnight change of watch frequently had to run or get hit. One could not run too fast on the rocky hill and often trip over the ground wire net. After an encounter with one of these little animals, the victim was indeed unpopular riding home on the streetcar. I speak from experience. The PH transmitter was a 5-kilowatt open-core transformer with a rotary grap, driven by an induction motor. Power supply was 115-volt 60-cycle. The tone of the spark was a beautiful 200-cycle note. Between 25 and 30 amps went into the antenna. One steamer, the SS Korea of the Pacific Mail Line, had a note very similar to the PH tone. Receiving equipment included carborundum and silicon detectors. A Type E United Wireless tuner was later replaced by a Marconi 101 and 106 tuner, all using crystal, of course. A Western Union sounder to the San Francisco Western Union office, SF, was a very important piece of equipment, as all incoming messages were sent to Western Union for delivery. Our landline call was also PH. Effective July 1, 1911, Station PH, in accordance with the International Agreement of June 24, 1910, became KPH, along with all other coastal and ship stations, thereby eliminating all two-letter calls. Shortly after this, the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company took over KPH, and all the ships and stations of the United Wireless and Massey Wireless Companies on the Pacific Coast. During my time at KPH, the station was the most important and active marine station on the Pacific Coast. The Marconi Company had hundreds of ships. The daily papers published ships' positions at sea, and dozens of ships would send in their position report, called the TR report, nightly. An error in mileage or a ship's name spelled wrong would bring in a flood of calls via telephone. We always told the one complaining to call the newspaper. We did not print it. We had a difficult and very bad situation to cope with regarding interference from the Polson Arc station close by, which would black us out completely. It was impossible to clear ships while the Polson Arc was in operation. This condition was well known to the management of Marconi and Polson, as well as the Federal Communications Office. No effort was ever made to stop or control this interference. For hours, the hissing of the arc would continue. Entirely on my own, determined to experiment with a different type of aerial to at least try and reduce the interference, we used parts of the barbed wire fence which surrounded the station. It was insulated and made four distinct aerials, one north, one south, one east, and one west. Interference was cut down considerably, and we copied ships and the Honolulu station through the arc interference. We could hear our own transmitted signals on the small aerial and also hear the ships break us if they missed a word. This was probably the first application of the break-in system used by a coastal station. When the office heard of this experiment, it was immediately ordered discontinued. It may interfere with patent rights, they said. During the winter of 1916, KPH took part in two long-distance record communications. The first was done by operator A.W. Peterson and was over 6,000 miles with the American Hawaiian steamer Floridian, WLR, off the China coast. The ship was using a 2-kilowatt quenched gap transmitter. The next record was my own, the Standard Oil tanker steamer J.A. Moffat, WRE. Operator Tom Lambert was en route Japan. I lost contact with Tom when he was over 5,100 miles from KPH. I do not know what type of receiver the ships were using, but do know that Peterson and I used a Galena detector with a homemade loose coupler and a pair of Brandy's phones. After each watch, we would wrap up our precious receiver and store it away in a suitcase in the attic and reconnect the company-furnished receiver. We were strictly forbidden to use any equipment except that furnished by the company. In other words, we were expected to use antique receiving apparatus unworthy of the results expected of it, supplied our own more modern receiving gear, accomplished worthy records for the company's benefit, and then get Hail Columbia for our improvements. It just does not make sense, but I knew several operators who were fired for using their own audience.
Dick Johnstone now cuts a tape typical of the transmitter of number 2, using the same text he transmitted on July the 24th, 1916. Then works KHK Honolulu. The operator, Frank Geisel, FG, who retired as manager of station KPH early in 1967. He then works the steamer Nile, VRE, operator Earl Woller, W6FS, who was actually operator on the Nile for several years.
Thank you.
1917 approached, KPH was equipped with a P4 5 kilowatt quench gap 500 cycle transmitter and a vacuum tube receiver. This was the first vacuum tube receiver ever used at the station. A barrel full of batteries, B batteries, were hauled up the hill by the two-horse method. The replacement of the good old rotary gap was a downright complete mistake. The ship operators reported the quench gap a flop. Put back the rotary, they all agreed. On the 6th of April, 1917, KPH and all the rest of the U.S. coastal stations were taken over by the U.S. Navy, as on that day, World War I included the United States of America. KPH's call became NWO. The quench gap transmitter stayed at Hillcrest. The receiver was moved to the Postal Telegraph Building in downtown San Francisco, and later to Yerba Buena Island. Hillcrest transmitter was operated by remote control from the two receiver locations. There were no more ship daily position reports. A watch was maintained for emergencies, mainly until after the end of World War.
Frank Geisel now sends the first message under naval operation using the P4 500 cycle transmitter at the Hillcrest location.
By the year 1919, the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company was in the process of being reestablished. The newly formed Radio Corporation of America had acquired all the coastal and ship stations of the Marconi Company. Mr. Arthur Isbell was General Pacific Coast Manager of the new company with offices in San Francisco. Byron C. McDonald and I were about to be discharged from the Navy and called on Mr. Isbell. We had an idea to build a marine coastal station here in San Francisco, affiliated with the Marine Exchange and local Chamber of Commerce, obtain the old call KPH, buy the equipment from the Radio Corporation of America, and serve the marine shipping trade. Arthur Isbell informed us that the RCA had already formulated similar plans and intended to locate KPH station at Marshall, Marin County, on the site of their high-power receiving station, which also went by the name of Marconi. So in 1920, KPH number 5 was put in operation by the Radio Corporation of America at Marshall, about 35 miles north of San Francisco. The transmitter was located at Bolinas, the location of the old Marconi high-power transmitters for the Honolulu Orient Circuit. KPH transmitter consisted of a 10-kilowatt synchronous rotary and was quite similar in tone to the old KPH rotary at Hillcrest. KPH operators did some very fine long-distance work. Of course, they were equipped with tube receivers, and ships were gradually being equipped with tubes owned by the company, not by the operators. In 1926, a tube transmitter was installed for KPH at the Bolinas Station, and an agreement was reached between various radio companies to eliminate spark transmitters completely at coastal stations using CW only. The rotary spark transmitter was kept as a standby. One night, operator John Patacini was working a Japanese steamer, the Tenyo Maru, JTY, who complained he could not read the CW signals. Patacini immediately ordered the spark set put into operation. McKay Radio made a complaint, which resulted in the spark set being dismantled, and John Patacini was actually the last operator to use a spark transmitter from station KPH.
John Patacini, who moved KPH from Hillcrest to the Marshall location and continued as station manager, told me of the last spark transmission. He was to have cut the next tape, but his untimely death in 1967 prevented. Frank Geisel takes a part of KPH with his bug and of JTY with a hand key. Thank you.
Directly after World War II began, on December 7, 1941, so few merchant ships were operating in the Pacific, the services of KPH were not being used. Merchant fleets were operating under supervision of the U.S. Navy and all used the U.S. Naval Radio Communication Services. About July 1942, KPH Station vacated the Marshall location and was not in operation until January 1, 1946, in a new location at Point Reyes Station, about 35 miles north of San Francisco, operated by the Radio Marine Corporation of America. KPH number 5 is a modern station and serves the entire Pacific area with a dozen capable operators. Frank Geisel is manager of KPH. Frank was one of my boys when I was chief operator for the Radio Corporation of America. He was then operator on the tanker SS Captain A.F. Lucas. Last year, paid him a visit and was honored to sit in and clear a ship off the Columbia River. In my day at old KPH, we could not hear a ship off the Columbia River in daylight and had 11 coastal stations to maintain the constant communication with ships at sea, which this modern KPH does alone.
This completes the history of KPH using Spark equipment. A comparable story covering operation from 1926 to present using tube transmitters will soon be added.